and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Will Heaven. So the news that's got Westminster into a bit of a flurry this morning actually relates to the Spectator cover story, Red London, and that's Will Heaven's report revealing that the party in London is so worried about the local election results that it wants to break away from the UK leadership and rebrand itself, much as the Scottish Conservatives did under Ruth Davidson. Now, Ruth Davidson doesn't seem that happy by the report, does she, Fraser? She's taken to Twitter today, which suggests that we've really hit a sore spot.
It's the phrase breaking away that she doesn't like. She will say that hers has been a triumph of unionism. Remember, this is a very much part of the Scottish Conservatives vibe, that they didn't break away. And when she won her leadership in 2011, it was against a candidate, Murdo Fraser, who said, you know what, the Scottish Conservatives are over as a party. We need to come up with a new party, a new name, just like the Unionist Party, who were the Scottish Conservatives before 1965. And Ruth Davidson was saying, no, we've got to stay. But ironically, under Ruth Davidson, the party actually succeeded in differentiating itself with a new brand, a new leader, a new ethos, organisation, pretty much an independent party, but obviously linked to the UK Conservatives. Now, this is what's making the London Tories look on with envious eyes. They see that their problem now is very much like the Scottish Tories' problem. They're saddled to a UK brand that seems more interested in the conservatism of the English shires than it does in cities. And they would like their own kind of London Ruth Davidson, their own structure, their own priorities, to try to better attune themselves to the priorities of London. Now, Ruth Davidson might not like it, but she's actually been a very good example of federal-style politics, where effectively she does run her own party in Scotland. She calls the shots, she's got her own strategist, she's got her own strategy, all in the name of unionism, but still, it's hers. Now, she shouldn't be too surprised if her success makes other Tories, especially in London, want a bit of a say.
And to be fair, Will, I mean, Ruth Davidson's actually suggested this in writing before. If you look at the Evening Standard late last year, she wrote an article encouraging London Conservatives to really find their own identity, perhaps a more liberal one. Do you think this would be beneficial to the London Tories?
I think it probably would. I think some of the Tories I spoke to for the piece and the magazine today worry that the party is becoming very provincial under Theresa May. The party leadership is obviously more worried about swing seats in the Midlands and the North than it is about seats in the centre of London, for example, which are very pro-Remain, for example. They basically don't see much of a future in those seats. They see the ethnic mix of the voters moving against them, for example. So there are people, I think, in the party who'd probably like to write London off. The only problem with that is that where London goes, the rest of the country does tend to follow. So, for example, at the 2005 general election, London performed quite well, and that was the sort of signifier that a bit of a Tory comeback was on the cards in the years that followed. So if the party does decide to write London off, they could be holding themselves a hostage to fortune in the future.
To be fair, I don't think we could actually overstate how much the Conservatives are trying to play down expectations for the local elections in general, but also specifically London. I've had several Conservative MPs look me in the eye and say it'll be a bad night for Labour if they don't win every single council in London. Fraser, what do you think a bad night for the Tories looks like?
Well, a bad night looks like getting a worse result than they did in 1994, which is fewer than, I think, 590 seats. Now, that 1994 election in London presaged the 1997 landslide with Tony Blair. I guess a catastrophic night is where Labour does win every council, and where places like Wandsworth and Westminster and Kensington and Chelsea, which, as Will Heaven says in his cover piece, were Tory even at the depth of the despair of the Blair era, if they turn red, then it really will suggest something's going badly wrong with conservatism and the notion of national conservatism. So, of course, if the Tories are trying to manage expectations, they're doing so quite convincingly. I've only spoken to about two or three Tories who don't think it's going to be a disaster for them. But also, this stores up lots of problems for the future. I mean, there are lots of other cities like London where the Conservatives are trying or struggling to reach out on a demographic basis. London's demographics, as Will says, anticipate the demographics of the rest of the country. It's 40% ethnic minority in London. And as David Cameron's chief strategist once said, the biggest indicator of not voting Tory is not being white. And if that's the case, the Tories really do have a large problem.
There are still a few factors that could sway it slightly more in the Conservatives' favour, but obviously this is still a very low bar. For example, after Labour's latest anti-Semitism row, you look at someone like Barnett, and it has a large Jewish community. That could mean that the Conservatives will actually hold that. Do you think factors like that might have a play, things like Russia?
There could be factors like that. The sort of broader national picture looks quite positive for the Tories in the last few weeks. There are definitely parts of outer London that they're slightly more optimistic about. Bexley and Bromley are a couple. They expect quite big gains in Sutton against the Lib Dems as well. But it's really central London and these old crown jewels, these boroughs that have been Tory since pretty much the dawn of time, that they really fear losing most of all.
Now, moving back to Russia, and as we discussed yesterday on the podcast, what is happening now with the latest in the Salisbury poisoning. This morning we had Ben Wallace, security minister in the Home Office, given an interview on the Today programme, where he confirmed reports that Jeremy Corbyn had not been given a full intelligence briefing on the poisoning. He was given what you get if you were a member of the Privy Council, which is not the same level as David Cameron afforded Ed Miliband over Syria. Fraser, is this surprising?
Well, not entirely. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn would, for example, have been told that the scientists in Portendown did not trace it to Russia specifically. That was never their job. They diagnosed the nerve agent, but they didn't know which country it came from. So it was a bit mischievous of him to then make such political capital when Portendown confirmed in public what he had been told in private, making out like the government's position was changing or it was being misrepresented. Now, David Cameron voluntarily gave Ed Miliband more information than he had to. That was partly because he really wanted to win him on board for this vote in Syria. He was desperate to get the votes, which he ended up not getting. But in this case, the Conservatives have to ask, is there grounds to let Jeremy Corbyn know more than he needs to, especially if he will use that information to try to make political capital? So I'm not entirely surprised that he's not been given the extra level of confidence that the opposition leaders in some cases can expect.
Now, well, Labour have accused the government of basically playing party politics by not giving Jeremy Corbyn a full briefing and by, in a way, implying that the reason they're not giving him a full briefing is they think that he might leak the information, whether purposely or naively. Do you think this is fair, or do you think actually this is a leader who the government really do have reason to mistrust?
Yeah, I think his history suggests that he is not entirely in sympathy with the British government, with the security services on these issues. So I would suggest that more than any other party leader in recent history, there would be some cause to withhold bits of information. Having said that, I do think Boris fluffed his lines with what he said that the Portendown scientists had told him. I think ministers should be incredibly careful when they're speaking in public to stick to the precise lines that various officials, whether it's in their own departments or others, have told them. So I think Boris kind of gave Labour a lot of ammunition to use on that.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Fraser. And you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. And if you want to hear more about Russia, why not join Andrew Neil's special guest on the 18th of April for a panel discussion asking, what does Russia want? And if you subscribe to the magazine at spectator.co.uk/Russia, 12 issues for £12, we'll even throw in a free ticket to the event.